This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello, and thank you for joining us on Dojo Live this Tuesday, August 22nd, 2023. My name is Kim Lantis, and I'm with my co-host, America Guerrero.
August 22, by the way.
August 22.
Hello, everybody.
What did I say?
23, I think.
I think I said 2023. It's okay. It is the 22nd of August, but that's not the point. The point is we're here to talk with Dan Falkowski of Product Tranquility, all about B2B SaaS pricing. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm very excited to be here, Kim and America. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I love your title, Founder and Chief Pricing Officer. I think we'll dive into that right now, actually. What's the Dan story before we, you know, dive into the specifics of pricing? What's your story? What's led up to Product Tranquility? And who and what is a Chief Pricing Officer?
Yeah, who is this Dan guy? Well, Chief Pricing Officer is interesting because, you know, when I decided to found a company, I realized that, you know, titles don't matter. And I thought Master of the Universe was a little bit too on the nose for a LinkedIn title. So Founder and Chief Pricing Officer was maybe the better choice there. But yeah, no, my name is Dan Falkowski. I've spent my entire 20-year career in software. I started more on what we might talk about as the value creation side than the value capture side. I was got a degree in computer engineering, started off as an engineer, actually writing the code, then in engineering management. Ultimately, I made a realization early on in my career that, you know, the computer didn't care how mad I got at it. It still wouldn't run the code that I wrote for it. So that was maybe not going to be a long-term successful route given my temperament.
And nothing's changed here as we have these frantic restarts and things to try to get on the live show today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, over time, I became much more fascinated by how products that we were building created customer value and how that turned into dollars and cents for the business. That interest led me to eventually pursue my MBA. I didn't realize it then, but I was quite lucky with my MBA. The program I joined is widely recognized having excellence in marketing. But I didn't realize till very recently that very few business schools have courses in pricing. So I got my theoretical grounding in pricing there. I will say that while that theoretical grounding was very powerful and very useful in some regards, be careful applying pricing across different domains. What may work in pricing hotel rooms or airline seats or Campbell's soup is very different than what may work in selling B2B software, for example. Mm-hmm. That being said, I got thrown into the pricing world in a practical matter immediately during an MBA internship. We may come back to this, but ultimately helped a company, very successful Silicon Valley startup. They had a challenge. Should they adopt a freemium approach? And helped them sort through that. TLDR, I do not recommend freemium, especially for the B2B SaaS market. We might circle back to that, but you know, it works in very rare circumstances. You know, and then after business school, I spent a lot of time getting deep on the value creation side as a product manager and product strategy, different levels of seniority at those companies. You know, we acquired a lot of other products. So I gained tremendous experience seeing all the mistakes those acquired companies had made in their pricing and product strategies. And, you know, I went off my own about 4 years ago now, and I have the privilege now of helping B2B SaaS CEOs and their teams build profitable businesses and helping fulfill their company's missions.
I love it. I love it. And that's exactly what Product Tranquility does, correct?
Yeah, we help high volume B2B SaaS CEOs define pricing and packaging for new and existing products.
All right. That's great. You know, because today we're getting into this conversation of how B2B SaaS businesses can create profitable, right? Profitable pricing strategies. And I think one of the things that I've heard you saying already is, you know, mistake, don't do this. So I think that's the first question. What do people really get wrong about pricing, and how can we learn from others' mistakes and not repeat them?
Yes, please learn from all my mistakes. I do not want to give the impression that, you know, I was handed down perfection from the mountaintop. This has definitely had a lot of bumps and bruises and lessons along the way. Look, there's so many things that are, I think, common misconceptions in the pricing world. I think the number one that I run into over and over again is that when it comes to SaaS pricing, most executives think that what you charge determines your success. In fact, who and how you charge determines your success. A lot of the engagements that people come to me and say, hey, we're going to launch this new product. You know, should it be $20 user, $100 user, $29.95? You know, those are all discussions around what we call the price level. So that'd be the what you charge. It's much more important to understand who your customers are that you're selling to, because there is no average customer, and therefore there is no average price, and there's no average packaging. And then how we think about charging is much more deterministic than that ultimate price level. So, you know, my general advice there is I would spend much of my time on what the price tag goes on and little time on what number goes on the price tag.
So is it possible to have a model for SaaS pricing, or how does it work? Because with every SaaS, with every user, everything is going to change, right? There are going to be different scenarios, or I don't know.
How do you determine the right how, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, there's a pretty in-depth overall set of things that we would work on if we were involved in engagement. But, you know, I've seen some common patterns. You know, overall, companies usually face four significant challenges when they try to tackle pricing. You know, one, they have an unclear target customer profile. They don't understand what customers are serving. Two, they have a poor understanding of how they create customer value or even what value means. Three, they are unclear about their product's unique differentiation. And four, they have a general underappreciation for the depth of decisions that go into a strong pricing and packaging approach. I feel like pricing tends to get looked at as this black box magic voodoo where it's, you know, some dark art form. Well, there is art and science, but I promise you it is much more science than it is art. But there's a lot more decisions involved again, and people are just simply focused on price level. They're leaving a lot of other dimensions out of the conversation. So, this situation led me to develop my services model for SaaS pricing. So services stands for the four components of the model, S, V, C, and S. I promise this is a happy accident given it's SaaS. I didn't plan it that way. It just came together. The four components are segments, value, competition, and strategy. So we need to think of understanding our customer segments first. You know, the context our customers are in is critical because that dictates the constraints they're facing and which value drivers they view as most important. As we get to the second part of the model, each segment will rank order value drivers differently. It'll cause them to value your product differently. In the third part of the model, we look at competition. Different segments have different competitive alternatives available to them. For example, what would they use if your company did not exist? So these first three elements, segments, value, and competition, we think of as kind of inputs to our overall pricing process. So we kind of need to look at them, you know, simultaneously. As much as we might want to try to process them sequentially, they all are working together, interacting in the marketplace together. Because your pricing power ultimately comes from the differentiated value you create for a particular segment beyond the competitive alternatives available. So those three elements, we filter down to what I call strategy. And strategy I use in the Michael Porter sense of the word. So strategy is about trade-offs. So many companies would like to be everything to everyone, but we have to decide, you know, what customer segments will we serve given the available segments in the market? Where are we best suited to play and win? Like, who are we going to target? Mm-hmm. How do we position ourselves in these customers' minds to clarify our differentiated value? And then how do we make all the necessary trade-offs among different elements of SaaS packaging? We can unwind. There's many dimensions of packaging that we may be able to talk about in this session. But, you know, these inputs also help inform our choice of a price level, which is the number we set, you know, to meet, you know, whatever business objective, you know, the company is trying to reach.
Yeah. You know, this is really interesting to me because I do, what I'm hearing is a bit of a chicken and the egg conundrum, right? That a lot of companies come in it with pricing sort of as an afterthought. Let's build our product. Let's get our features. Let's roll out these packages. How much is it going to cost? But then you come in and say, you know, we need strategy. We need to have our value. We need to understand these things, which means I'm hearing that and like, wait a second. Then is that potentially going to change my product and what it is that I'm offering? And so what does this look like? When is the best time to actually be taking pricing into consideration as well? Or what's the solution if, oops, I've treated pricing as an afterthought. I have this product now. What do I do? Like, how does that all fit together? in an ideal world and also in the real world that we live in.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I love this. I think it's an element that folks don't often consider, but I think about quite a bit because, as I mentioned, for some reason, you know, the pricing and packaging got slotted as a step in the execution phase in the run-up to product launch, where it's like, okay, we're going to launch in a month. Let's figure out our pricing and packaging. And I just think that's entirely backwards. Like ultimately, look, you don't really have a choice of, you know, whether you will have a pricing conversation with your customer. The only decision you get to make is when you will have the conversation. And my argument is that you need to be having that as early as possible. God forbid it's the poor sales rep who you've just launched the product and they're having the first conversation with the customer and, you know, showing the new fancy features and the product customers, like how much does this thing cost? And then they get laughed at or even worse, and probably more likely is just a look of confusion because your pricing, your packaging is so kind of off base given, you know, the problem you're solving and the value for the customer that you end up taking a hard, you know, right turn. You know, let me give you an example there. So, you know, I talk about packaging a lot. I'll say pricing and packaging, but I always mean both. It just gets a little over the top because you say both. We think about packaging, right? There's a couple different elements. And one of those, what we call like the price metric. So price metric is how much you're paying as a customer scale with, you know, the amount you're consuming. So we're often familiar with this in terms of maybe product scales by number of seats or amount of data stored. If you've ever used Dropbox, right, you pay for more data storage, or Google Drive is very similar to that, or maybe number of API transactions. Well, if, you know, let's just say you're talking as a sales rep, you're talking about all the amazing features of your customer, you've been talking about the customer situation and their problem and how your product is going to help them. And then you get to the pricing conversation and then the sales rep's like, oh yeah, we price by gobbledorps. And the customer's like, what? Well, yeah, the gobbledorps. So you got to understand how the architecture of our system works. So gobbledorps are a unit that specify how much our AWS servers and storage cost us. And so now, you know, whatever, I just made up this term. But this is a hard right turn in the conversation. We just went from fully focused on the customer, the problem, the value of the software to now, I mean, and again, this is why the price level, it's like, look, if you screw that up, who cares how much it costs per gobbledorp? Like it's irrelevant because now you've made
the customer. Because now I'm worrying about how do I track gobbledorps instead of what's the value that I'm actually going to get from this.
Yeah, be like, we've never tracked gobbledorps before. How do I make sure that we stay under our limit of gobbledorps? Do I have a team who can monitor that? Like, you know, so these are the things that, you know, really need to get thought of ahead of time, and then can be those things as well are very difficult to change. Say you're a month out from launch, you know, all of the entitlement logic that you have in the product and your billing systems and your measurement systems and being able to display to the customer what they've used for that month, right? I don't know if anyone remembers, I used to get a print copy of my cell phone bill from the, you know, back in the day. And, you know, it would have literally like 50 pages, every text message, every phone call I had. Well, you know, I mean, enterprise software, B2B SaaS software is not that much different. Like if you're charging by some unit, there's a finance guy on the other side who's like, this bill's high. Like, what did we actually use? Yeah. You know? And so if you think about all those things that have to get built and enabled, you don't want to run into this, oh, we've made a terrible decision a month ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I think you asked another question. Well, I'll stop there, but I do want to acknowledge you asked another question. Like, what if you get yourself into that situation, or what would you recommend instead? I guess any follow-ups on what I've said so far?
Well, I'm just thinking who is responsible for pricing those decisions. Who is included in that? The sales, the product, or what? What metrics should
not we the poor sales rep?
Yeah.
Well, this is a great point because I think one of the reasons that companies get into this situation is because no one owns pricing. comes to mind, if anyone's seen the Spider-Man meme where there are two Spider-Men pointing at each other. It's like, three, who owns pricing? Yeah, or three of you, right? All, you know, who owns pricing? And they all point at the other person. I think too often in companies, it's unclearly defined. So if you just think about a B2B SaaS startup, right? Assuming they're successful, how does it begin? You got three founders maybe in a room. They spend all of a half a day, talking about pricing and packaging before the product launches. They put something out, and then start to have some traction in the market. Obviously, I'm canvassing over a whole bunch of probably pain and details here, but over time, hey, we need more engineers to help build more software, we need more salespeople to sell it, we need more marketers to generate demand, we need more support people, etc. But at no point are they like, oh, we need to get a pricing person in here. So now you've got an organization. The founders, spent almost no time originally thinking about pricing and packaging, and they probably weren't experts in pricing. And then at no point was it really delegated to anybody explicitly. So then you end up in these situations where I've heard these stories where, CEO comes into the executive Monday team meeting and is upset about some pricing issue and just yells at the entire executive team, and everyone sheepishly looks around at each other. And, then nobody does anything because nobody's like, well, I don't really own it. Like, well, and the problem is, it's like, in other domains, there may be a go-getter, someone who really wants to take charge and run with the baton and be like, I'll pick it up, I'll go do this, I know it's not my responsibility. Well, that person's going to have a fun lesson as soon as they try to touch pricing, because what they're going to learn is that pricing and packaging affects every single C-suite executive at that table. And so they're going to run into the electric shock where they irritate somebody unexpected, and that person's going to learn a lesson and be like, I'm never doing that with pricing again. So I think it's really incumbent on CEOs to think seriously and earlier than they maybe feel comfortable with, to really appoint someone as the pricing leader in your business. Now, who should that be? My general recommendation is product marketing should own pricing. I think product management could own it as well, but they usually have too much other things on their plate. But both of them, I think, are in good strategic level of the company. Product marketing, and again, a lot of this I will say about product marketing could apply to product management as well, but they have good vision of the competitive landscape, the value that they provide customers. They've the opportunity to do in-depth customer research and analysis. They have a strategic lens on the business, right? They need to, hey, how is this going to affect our demand, this week, but also, where are we trying to get as a company in over the strategic horizon of multiple years? And so I think that's important. I think, and ultimately, I generally recommend that companies invest in what I would call a pricing council or pricing committee. The idea being is that it is going to affect everyone at that C-suite level. And so we need to have a way to keep all those stakeholders involved and engaged in decisions, right? We don't want to leave. The worst case is to, leave a decision until it's about ready to roll into production. And somebody's like, wait, if you do that, it's going to screw up customer success, or it's going to screw up support, or it's going to screw up renewals, or whatever it might be. And so having that is important, but also having a designated leader that can have decision-making authority so that you can, we want everyone's input. I view pricing and product management similarly. I think product management is actually, even though it's still a relatively nascent function, look, sales has been around, for thousands of years, right? In different forms. But product management as a function, maybe only slightly older than customer success, which probably has come out in the last 10 years. So let's say product management's about 30 years old. So what is the function of the product manager in the building? It's to fill that role. It's like, hey, we've got to make a bunch of decisions. Those decisions are going to have trade-offs with the business. There's going to be, if support had its way, the company would never ship a new feature, because every time we ship new stuff, something breaks and support load goes up, right? Sales had its way, we would never care about what existing customers use, because they don't care. They're just trying to sell new business. Hey, just build this new feature for this next customer, right? So product is in this position where it has to make these hard trade-offs, knowing that it's going to irritate somebody, right? But they're there to listen to all the stakeholders, including the customer who's not inside the building, and make the decision that's best for the organization as a whole and what it's trying to achieve in its mission. But pricing, I don't think, has reached that level of maturity where it has the same level of importance and same level of impact across the organization, but there's not necessarily a designated process or owner to move that forward.
Well, What about finance? Is finance the one who is knocking the door all the time saying like, hey, we have devs, we need to sell more sales? Or what is the role of finance here?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I guess who shouldn't own pricing, I guess, is the other side of this question. So whoever is responsible for negotiating pricing with customers, that group shouldn't own pricing because the incentives are not aligned for the long-term interests of the business. Finance, I'm not a fan of I'm a fan of finance people in general. I have nothing against they're great people and they do really important work. I'm not a fan of them owning pricing. They build very nice models, but they tend to be too far from the customer. Often they're also too concerned about margin. And so there are a bunch of different trade-offs that we want to make, and margin is, I would say, rarely the primary factor in a pricing decision. So they are a key stakeholder. Sales and finance are key stakeholders in the process, and they should definitely be included. But I do not think ownership belongs to the finance function ultimately.
All right. So let's talk about the strategies then. I mean, we talked about more about the how than the what. So what are some of the options out there, and how might this vary perhaps at company stage or different needs? I know you mentioned freemiums, we've got things like free trials, packaging came up, value-based. Can we dive into a few of those a bit? And maybe, is there a one size fits all? Freemiums work, you don't like freemiums all, I don't think, but they work for this circumstance.
Yeah, you've opened up about 3 hours worth of conversation. So let me see if I can quickly lay out a landscape for you, and then we'll figure out where to go from there. So we've talked about this idea of packaging a lot, right? Pricing and packaging, and I've emphasized how important packaging is. So packaging in the SaaS world has four elements. Let's use everyone's favorite fast food restaurant, McDonald's, as a fun example. So when I go to McDonald's, I pay $4 for a Big Mac. Okay. So in that case, I have a price metric, which I'm buying one Big Mac. So the number of Big Macs I buy, I pay $4 each. So that's the price metric. So similar in if I'm buying a CRM per seat, right? I pay a certain number per seat. So that'd be my price metric. And then my price level is $4. The other thing that we need to think of is our pricing model. So pricing model in a McDonald's is a perpetual transaction. I pay my money. We have an exchange. There's no more flow of payments through the system. It's done. But obviously, if we get into software, and now even in the world of non-software, there's many other choices. We could have an auction-based model like Google or Facebook has for their ad inventory. We could have a subscription pricing. We could have a pay-as-you-go or utility billing. So my electricity company, I use however much electricity I'm going to use for the month, and then they send me a bill in arrears. So there's a choice around pricing model. So with McDonald's, we just have the perpetual model. Then I have things like my offer configurations or offer bundles. So if I decide to buy a value meal, I get my Big Mac, my Coke, and my fries all together. This would be a bundle. I save some money by getting all the things together. We want to do the same thing in software packaging, where we decide, hey, these are, instead of making customers choose from a giant menu of individual items where they have to build their own, which would massively increase the cognitive load of our sales teams, of our operational systems, and of the customer or the prospect in purchasing it, right? We want to make it easy. Hey, look, we find that customers who get a Big Mac and fries often want a Coke. So we're just going to throw that in there, and we're going to give you one set price for that whole thing. And then we think about things like the price fences or price structures. So a price fence, let me see, my McDonald's analogy might break down. Taking a bus. So for example, price fence, it might be, if I get on a bus, I'm going to pay one fee, but a senior citizen or a student is going to pay another fee, right? So these are different elements, right? The other thing is by volume, right? So I may, if I buy one seat of a piece of software, that price for that seat is going to be different than the 1,000th seat I buy, right? And so how that changes over time, we think of as the price structure. So thinking through all those elements, right? As you can imagine, like we just laid out, there's five different dimensions there. And, you know, it becomes much more of a puzzle to solve than just, you know, trying to figure out, is this $20 user or $100 user? Should our prices end in five or nines?
For absolute sure. I think there's a lot of options and a lot of strategies to choose from. What if I find my strategy's not working or not working? Finance isn't happy with my margin. No. When do I need to reevaluate perhaps the structure that I'm using? Is there a good time to do that? A better time? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, there's no magic number that dictates, you know, how often you should revisit your pricing. Generally, I would say it makes sense to revisit it at least once a year or whenever a change in product or market necessitates a review. So I think I'm not a big fan of, you know, 5-10 year plans, especially in the scale up phase of companies that I deal with. I think anyone who, you know, polished off their big strategy deck in December 2019, thinking like, all right, we've got our strategy locked and loaded, and then ran into March 2020 and the world changing with COVID or last year with 50-year record inflation, right? It's like, hey, like it may be time. Like, I know we just did a pricing review, but yeah, you know, it's only been 6 months, but now we've got 50-year high inflation all of a sudden. Like, we probably should take another look at it, right? So there's, I think you, I would say if you're beyond every 2 years, you definitely should take a look at it. And probably, you know, I'd see what I've seen kind of best in class companies are doing something with their pricing and packaging about once a quarter. So I'd say anywhere from that sort of once a quarter to 2 years, you're probably in a healthy range. If it gets outside of there, you may need to, adjust. I think that the thing is that, you know, pricing is not one and done. Like, companies are constantly improving their products. We haven't really talked about value that much in this conversation, but value and price are intimately linked, and your engineering product teams are constantly changing the value of your product. Your competitors are constantly changing the offerings that they're bringing to market. So your differentiated value is changing. And so as the market changes, both your product and your competitors, it makes sense to revisit your pricing to make sure that's still in line. You know, what was a differentiating feature that no one else in the market had that you could charge a premium for, you know, 3 years ago, you know, maybe table stakes now. And so you need to be, you know, keep aware of that. So I think this is where it really helps to have something like a pricing committee, a pricing council that is always kind of keeping a pulse on, hey, is this being brought up? Like, when we have major new features, major new launches, is there a process by which we could flag, hey guys, like, we've, you know, what is our goal for this new set of functionality? Like, are we trying to directly monetize this? Is this just to add more value to, you know, shift the price value ratio? Yeah. Right. It really depends upon what your goals are in the business.
What comes to my mind right now, matter of fact, I think my husband and I just had this conversation a day, two, three ago. We were talking about streaming. Everybody streams now. And I was frustrated because all of these movies that I've been wanting to watch lately are on Stars Plus. What is it? I don't even know. I don't have that one. And I'm like, damn, I'm trying to decide. The last thing I need is another streaming source. And so I refuse. I'm not doing it. And then he's like, well, we don't really use Prime. Like, we can get rid of that. And I'm like, but wait, the value there is not actually what I'm watching on Amazon Prime. I watch a show every now and then, but like, I like the free freaking shipping that I get along with it, or the discounted shipping when I make an online purchase. So it's like, that's not going anywhere for me, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a really good value conversation.
Yeah. Well, what they've done effectively there, so they've done a couple of things. The Amazon Prime situation is fascinating. You know, that's a really effective use of bundling. If you think about it, because they've added, you know, the free shipping with Prime Video, I think the Prime Music, I think they just launched a Prime Pharmacy. So Amazon is locking you into this entire ecosystem. The other thing is that, you know, that's a very interesting pricing decision. I was listening to Jeff Bezos. He gave a talk at some forum, and he was talking about, you know, the original idea for free shipping in Amazon Prime was suggested, I think, by an internal engineer, and it gave, you know, all the executives a heart attack. Because if you think about an e-commerce business, like, shipping is a major expense. It's like the major expense that can make or break an e-commerce company. And so, you know, Jeff Bezos had this great quote where he says, you know, he's like, you know, what happens when you have a free, you know, buffet? Who shows up first? The heavy eaters. You're like, did I really say as many prawns as you could eat? Oh my God. And so that's what happened. So they really had to make a strategic decision to say, hey, you're going to pay $120 or whatever it is, you know, when they launched, for a year. and you get as much shipping as you want. Well, who is the first to adopt that? It's the people who are already spending more than $120 on shipping. So from that logic, it looks like it's upside down, but they had conviction in their long-term strategy where he knew that, you know, look, their cost of their shipping would come down over time because they're going to continue to make investments in the logistics. So they looked at that long-term cost curve. They said, nobody's going to meet us because we're going to beat everyone on that aspect. And it's going to be such a powerful lock-in that Amazon's going to become the one-stop shop for any e-commerce purchase you make. So there's a brilliant number of pricing decisions. It's an absolute brilliant case study of pricing. And I highly recommend people pay attention to what Bezos and the Amazon Prime folks did if they're looking for pricing lessons.
For sure. You know, we've come to the end of our half hour today already, Dan, if you can believe it or not. It's been a fantastic conversation. I kind of like these conversations a lot where it feels like this is not a bad thing. I walk away, I think, with more questions sometimes than answers, but I think that's the absolute goal. And for me, the takeaway is just that, like, not to approach pricing as an afterthought and to approach people who know, right, to lean on experience, to lean on case studies, and, you know, really come at it thinking through and developing a plan. And yet at the flip side, there's this need for agility, right, the need to be flexible in the event when the unforeseen happens. So do you have any final words of wisdom that you'd like to add?
I think, you know, ultimately, the number one piece of advice I would give people is talk to your customers. And I think in the product management world, too often that can be myopic, and we only think about talking to our end users who are day in, day out. And I think when it comes to pricing, we really also need to think about talking to the buyers, because those buyers are going to have a different perspective that we need to include. And then if there's a second piece of advice, it's stuff we've already talked about, is just have a pricing process, have a pricing owner. You know, this is an important growth lever for your business. And if no one owns it, right, if there's no measurement system, I think it's one of these areas that just gets ignored because, you know, if the COO gets that AWS bill on their desk, right, and they're like, oh my God, like, I got to do something about this, right? And that sparks a whole conversation with the VP of engineering to, like, see what we can do to lower that, right? That's a real tangible cost. But if you're charging $10 a user and you could be charging $100 a user, right, equivalently, right, that doesn't show up on your P&L and that's not visible. And so, like, you know, if you don't have a process inside, that's just, you know, lost opportunity that you don't have any way to really sort of operationalize in your business.
I love it. And thank you. Thank you so much for your wisdom and your time today. Stick around with us for just a minute as we go off air. But before we do, America, please share with us who we're going to be talking with tomorrow.
Tomorrow is going to be a conversation with Shirsha Ramdas, founder and CEO of the company Lumber. The topic is going to be about hacking growth opportunities. How does striking a balance between revolution and evolution increase the success rate for startups? Don't miss the show tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific.
Some great shows this week. A lot of themes and starting up and getting started. I think with pricing, of course, being at the forefront. I love it. Thank you again, Dan. We wish you and Product Tranquility nothing but success.
Thank you so much for having me.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.